from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On Thursday, literary communities around the world will be hosting readings, listening to music, and eating madeleines to celebrate the life and legacy of author Marcel Proust. This month marks the 100th anniversary of the publication of Swan's Way, the first volume in Proust's 3,000-page, 7-volume novel In Search of Lost Time. We're going to talk to longtime Bay Area journalist and Radio Proust host Larry Bensky about Swan's Way and how a Parisian recluse named Marcel Proust became one of Western literature's most iconic figures. And glad to have Larry Bensky back with us on Forum. Welcome to the program.
It's been too long, Michael.
Yes, it has. And, you know, we have known each other a long time, but I had no idea about your pedigree. I knew you were at Yale. I didn't know that you actually studied Proust in Paris and were with the Paris Review in Paris and have been kind of a lifetime devotee of Proust. All this was new to me.
Well, it wasn't new to me, but it blossomed forth about 7 years ago when I belatedly retired from the troubled precincts of Pacifica Radio and KPFA and was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I kind of made a mental list that I wanted to spend more time listening to music, that I wanted to spend more time in France, that I wanted to spend more time with literature in general. And all of those things pointed arrows for me to Marcel Proust, who, as you say, I had first read in college. And when I lived in Paris as editor of the Paris Review, the first winter I was there, a very cold and lonely winter of 1963, where I experienced the Kennedy assassination alone in a tiny stone house in the French Alps, trying to figure out from a little radio what the hell was going on. After that, I moved to Paris in December of 63. I knew almost no one. And my hand happened upon a copy of Swan's Way, the first volume, one day when I was walking along those old bookstalls that are still there on the Seine near Notre Dame. And I bought it for something like 40 cents. I still have that copy, by the way.
And this is in French, not translation.
Oh, yeah, no, in French, of course. Well, I knew how to read French very well. I couldn't speak it.
You're like me. We're both handicapped that way. I mean, I can't speak it nearly as well as I think somebody who is almost illiterate in French, but I can read it.
Well, now I'm bilingual after all these years, and I became French bilingual, actually, during that 3.5-year stay there. But at the time, I could read it pretty well, thanks to people like Henri Père, my teacher at Yale. And I started reading it, and I had a little dictionary, and I read it and read it, and I had not a whole lot of other things to do that winter. So I went back and found the second volume and eventually read all 7 all the way through in that cold, lonely winter. And that stamped me as a Proustian. And, of course, reading them in Paris, you inevitably get a sense of Proust in that place. And I started going to the Parc Monceau and the neighborhoods where he lived. Of course, I could never go to restaurants like the Ritz where he used to hang out. Then as now, it was well beyond my means. But I also went to his ancestral village where his father came from, Combray, which he called Combray, which was then Illier, now it's Illier Combray. And I visited the little house where his aunt Léonie lived, and which is theoretically the site of the opening passages in Swan's Way. So I became kind of a Proustian. And then many years passed, and I didn't pick up Proust at all until my daughter was born almost 17 years ago. And as children will, as you know, Michael, as a father, had several nights when she wouldn't sleep well, and nothing I could do would work, including singing lullabies and walking up and down the hall. And my hand lighted upon, in my enormous bookshelves, disorderly, that volume of Proust, and I pulled it down and I started reading it to her. Why not?
Well, why not? I mean, this is a time of Proust mania throughout the country with this anniversary coming up on Thursday. There's a marathon of reading Proust, in fact, in Brooklyn, ending at the French embassy there, estimated to be about 20 and a half hours of Swan's Way. And all this activity will tell people, especially I know there are Proustians and quasi-Proustians and people who love Proust out there who will want to know about all the activity. The thing people need to know, though, initially is he was turned down by publishers. I mean, back in 1912, there were two publishers who turned him down. He had to essentially front the publication of it with his own money.
He self-published.
Yeah, and I think especially in these days when people are always coming to me, how can I get published?
Exactly.
I couldn't help thinking of that story. And somebody no less than Andre Gide said, I mean, actually, I refuse to read this because it's all this, you know, high-toned socialite snobbish stuff. And what could Proust possibly tell us, I think, was Gide's response.
Well, Proust, of course, obviously can tell us a lot, and that's why after his book was published. But it had, as you say, a long and tortured history, and it's being commemorated here locally in the event that I've put together and I'm hosting on Thursday night in Berkeley at St. John's Presbyterian Church. But there is that reading. There's a week-long reading, marathon reading in Paris. There are readings in Tokyo. There's a huge amount of things going on in Boston and Providence, all over the planet where there are Proust people, which there are everywhere. But the publication history for him was very tortured. He was, as André Gide said, a mondain, somebody who liked to socialize and be in the social world. But he was also a very well-known writer at the time. He had written dozens of articles and critiques and parodies that had been published. As a bright young high school student, he co-founded a magazine with other writers, the Revue Blanche, which was quite well-known in literary circles. He wrote incessantly, but he couldn't ever find the discipline or the structure to put together what he wanted to do as fiction until it suddenly began to come together about 4 years before his first book, Swan's Way, was published. He actually wrote a long novel, almost as long as A la Recherche, called Jean Santeuil, but he could never figure out how to make it become a fiction, a real novel fiction. And in the event, it wasn't published till 30 years after his death, Jean Santeuil. A lot of us who are Proustians read it with great enjoyment. And there are, of course, pieces of it that he transformed and took and put into his own masterwork. But you're right. He had a hard time getting published. One of the publisher's readers who first looked at the manuscript said, I don't know who the hell is ever going to read a book about somebody who takes 45 pages to go to bed.
You know, I was reading this excellent Proustian discourse by a local Berkeley-based writer named Larry Bensky in the Daily Planet, and he managed to key in on, just thematically, so much of Proust. Memory, the effect of arts on us, the vanities of society, the conflicts between people and nations. I mean, that kind of says it to a great degree, but it's way beyond that. It's kind of, Proust once said all literature is gossip, and there's all that elusiveness that one finds in Proust. There's also, you know, I mean, people associate him, you know, drinking herbal tea with a Madeleine in it, but there's really the whole spectrum, the whole panoply, the whole carnival of the human animal.
Well, that's why his books have endured when so many other people's have gone by the road. And incidentally, we are going to have Madeleines and herbal tea on Thursday night at St. John's Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. The themes that he undertook, Michael, were very unusual because he was a very eccentric man who lived a very eccentric life. He had, from the age of 9, a very bad case of asthma and could not undertake what are thought to be normal activities at all. He also, fortunately for him, was a person of great means and never had to work a day in his life. So he had the leisure, but also the compulsion to try when he was alone, which he was a lot of the time, although he was also had a very active social life till he became ill in later years, to think and read and think and read and absorb. And not just words, but music was extremely important to him. And when I decided 7 years ago to try to put this together, one of the main impetuses that I had was I wanted to spend a lot more time listening to music, and I wanted to spend time absorbing it and understanding it and being a Proustian about it, because you read Proust for 10 minutes and you're going to come across 20 musical allusions.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I want to talk more about Proust and his work and get our listeners involved in this, but he invented a composer named Vinteuil in order to write about the emotions generated by particularly profoundly evocative music, and he himself wrote letters saying that there were elements of Schubert and Wagner, among other composers, in his mind as he wrote about Vinteuil. Many writers and many musicologists have tried to reproduce what the sounds might have been. In this clip, we're going to hear one such effort, the rarely heard Vinteuil Sonata by Claude Pascal in a recent Paris performance. And what can you add to this, Larry?
Well, it's a fascinating story. I've gone down so many sidetracks with this and side issues and have been so blessed, really, to have all these experiences. Claude Pascal is a 93-year-old man who in 1945 was basically underground in Paris trying to survive the Nazi occupation and earning a living as an accompanist for music hall performances. And when he would take the subway, the metro, across town in order to make the time pass easily at about an hour and a half on the metro, which was constantly stopped and being inspected by the Gestapo and all of that, he read Proust. And at the war ended, he got a scholarship to go to the French Academy in Rome. He's a well-known musicologist. For 40 years, he was a teacher of composing and an analyst of music at the leading French conservatory. So here's this young man comes back from Rome, and he's written a sonata because of Proust called the Vinteuil Sonata. But he left it in Rome, the music. And he got so busy with other things, he forgot completely about it until an archivist 2 years ago was studying in Rome, and she found this Vinteuil Sonata. She said, what the heck is this, and who's Claude Pascal? Well, to make a long story short, if you look on my website, you'll see the Vinteuil Sonata played because the music was brought back to Paris.
You want to give out your website? Just so.
Oh, yes, of course. How could I not? So bad at self-promotion. Radio Proust, one word, radioproust.org, real simple. But if you look on that, you'll see a performance of the Vinteuil Sonata. And Pascal has recorded it now as well. And I've met the man. He's a wonderful old guy. But he was inspired to try to figure out, well, what would this mythical music be like? And I think this is not so much about the music, Michael. It's about what inspired me, what inspires others in reading literature, not just Proust, but literature in general. What does it get us into in the world, in the formation of art, in the resonance of our souls, things like that. I go to bed most nights with Chopin, even though he's been dead for a long time. He puts me to sleep. He helps me sleep. And if I wake up in the middle of the night, I get into bed with Schubert or somebody like that. And I think that's just me personally. But the resonance that things have, like reading Proust or listening to some of these musicians or looking at great art, which is another big element in Proust, is very, very important. And, you know, Michael, you and I are both college teachers and have been for years. What infuriates me and drives me absolutely crazy these days is this, you know, what good are the humanities discussions? Can't get you a job.
And the numbers of those enrolled continue to decline.
Exactly.
But we lament and beat our breasts. Let's hear this music. Sampling of what people will get if they avail themselves of all the activity that's going on, particularly at the church. Can you give the details of that? Since you're not good at self-promotion, I'll help you.
You help me. It's Thursday night at 7 o'clock this Thursday at St. John's Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. And tickets are on sale at Mrs. Dalloway's bookstore and University Press Books. I would advise people who can do so to get tickets because it looks like it's going to be sold out. We may have a few at the door, but possibly not. There's going to be music and readings from Proust, Michael.
And herbal tea and Madeleine's.
At the end. The music will be by music composers that and actual music that influenced Proust and that he knew, with one exception. Music by Camille Saint-Saëns, Chopin, Renaldo Ahn. Let me talk about Renaldo Ahn in a minute, get back to him if you would. Schubert, Gabriel Fauré, Claude Debussy, and César Franck.
Larry, we could do a whole hour on just the music related to Proust, but let me get back to Proust with
okay.
you if we could. And by the way, we're talking to Larry Bensky, executive producer and host of Radio Proust, which is a project of the Bard College Center, and he's former national affairs correspondent for Pacifica Radio and will be hosting this 100th anniversary of the first publication of Swan's Way, the first volume in Proust's 3,000-page novel. I'm wondering, a lot has been made out of Proust's homosexuality, particularly because some feel that he was maybe faking his heterosexuality or disparaging homosexuality. A lot has been made out of the fact that he was Jewish, particularly because it was contemporaneous with the Dreyfus affair. And don't know, how much do these weigh in, or do they, for you as a Proustian, as someone who loves Proust and has gone into really finite details about his life and times?
A lot. A lot. It was important to him, and it's important to anybody who wants to understand Proust. He was a man. One of the reasons, by the way, Michael, why there's been kind of a Proust uprising in the last 20 or 30 years is he's become kind of an iconic figure in the gay community, because his approach to being gay, and for that matter being Jewish, in salons where there was a lot of anti-Semitism and a lot of anti-homosexual attitudes, his approach was, this is who I am. And if you don't like me and you don't want to be around me, that's your problem, not mine. And the Dreyfus affair, which you mentioned, was – Proust was not a political person by and large. He knew about politics. He knew about current affairs. He read tons of newspapers and magazines and talked about it all the time and talks about it in his books. But the Dreyfus affair touched a chord in him because he felt correctly that Dreyfus was being persecuted, a French army officer who was framed on a charge of espionage and had a horrible, horrible set of circumstances happen to him, including
a Jewish-French officer.
Jewish-French officer. At a time when anti-Semitism in the French military and in France in general was a disease, Dreyfus was framed, convicted, sent to Devil's Island. And Proust, with the great writer who was his mentor, Anatole France, who wrote J'accuse about the Dreyfus affair, and Émile Zola, who wrote J'accuse, not Anatole
France.
Yes,
I was just going to correct you.
Thank you. But Anatole France was active in this. But Émile Zola wrote J'accuse. All of these writers, most of whom weren't Jewish, joined with Proust in saying, what is this? It's crazy. You know, there's only one justice. And an injustice is an injustice, no matter who's persecuted by it. The Dreyfus affair is a leitmotif in Swan's Way and in other Proust books, where the people in the salons divide themselves into Dreyfusards and anti-Dreyfusards. And Proust is very good at mocking, but also analyzing people's social attitudes, people who take stands on things merely because their friends are for it or against it. And as you read Proust and the Dreyfus affair comes up again and again, you see this. On the homosexual element and the gay element, it's much more complicated. There have been, and there are now, probably within the range of our voices, dozens if not hundreds of people writing PhD theses about these kinds of topics. And a very bright and intelligent woman in New York at Columbia University, Elizabeth Ladenson, has actually written a book called Proust Lesbian, in which she's trying to show how the suppression and twisting of gender roles in Proust is another way of getting at the message that he was trying to say. He was out front about being gay, but many of the iconic love figures in his book are girls and women.
Odette.
Odette was the major one. But the Albertine and the jeune fille en fleurs, the girls he meets on the beach in Cambrai. And so there is an active analysis of this. And, you know, you talked about Proust being published. He was scared of not getting published because he had gay themes in his book. And he said, I'm not going to take them out. This is who I am and this is what I'm writing about. But he was very cautious and careful about who he'd approach and let know what he was writing. The man who supervised the serials in the leading newspaper of the day, Figaro, he thought was anti-gay. And so he gave the book to his assistant, and the guy got offended. And there's all kinds of literary politics and stuff that are very important to understand the gay element in it. But at the end of the day, Proust said, look, this is who I am, and this is what I write, and this is the way it's going to be.
He was out of the closet at a time when this is very unusual.
The closet was large.
Let me do this. I don't know, those of you who have read Proust, love Proust, want information about Proust, or just seeking to join this conversation, you can do so now. Our toll-free number is available, and we invite your calls. That number is 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us, 866-733-6786, and you can also post at this point is, since our website isn't working, is you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum, or email us, and our email address is kqed.org. Also, can go to our Facebook page, but feel free to join us. Here's an email from Rick who says, can Mr. Bensky recommend an English version? I don't have time to learn French. Well, isn't it this professor from the University of Alabama did the new annotated version? Oh, you've got it right there. Okay.
I have it right here. I'll hold it up to the microphone so everyone can see it. The new newly revised translation is absolutely brilliant. It just came out from Yale University Press. Swan's Way by Marcel Proust. The C.K. Scott Moncrief translation, which was the classic one that started in 1927, actually in 1922, right after Proust's death, annotated it by William Carter, the professor at University of Alabama, who's become a good friend of mine through the course of all this Proust work, a wonderful man. So, yes, I would recommend you pick up the new edition of Swan's Way by Marcel Proust.
And it's now a graphic novel, I want you to know.
Oh, yes, only in French.
And, you know, speaking of a graphic, I know, like me, you're a big aficionado of Harold Pinter. He actually wrote a screenplay back in 1992 about all seven volumes, but it's never gone to screen.
You know, that's a very interesting point, Michael. I'm glad you brought that up because I've been trying for several years among my other activities, and some of them I get done and a lot I don't, to put on a Proust film festival. Of all the films that have been made about Proust and of Proust's work and scenarios and screenplays, because not only Pinter but Visconti wrote a screenplay that didn't get produced and couldn't find funding for it. A lot of people think Pinter's is the absolute best thing that it could have ever been done in cinema. But, you know, if Harold Pinter can't get funding and Visconti can't get funding, how do I think I'm going to get funding?
What does it tell us? What it should tell us is that there are artists and intellects who have always been drawn to Proust, even though – remember those buttons? You're old enough to remember. They used to wear – they have buttons that say Kafka is a kvetch, and they have Proust was a yenta. Well, I mean, he was – it's enjoyable to read just on the level – I mean, what he does for the senses and what he does for the inner world and the outer world. I mean, Stephen Breyer, in fact, the chief – I mean, the justice from the United States Supreme Court had a whole article in the New York Review of Books about Proust where he said, you know – He's a Shakespeare of our inner life, and that's not too hyperbolic. And yet here, as iconic as he is to so many in these rarefied circles, hasn't made the kind of masses that you would expect with, even somebody like Truman Capote who said literature is gossip too.
Yeah. Proust is not for everyone, and interpretations of Proust are not for everyone. 2 years ago, a wonderful French television filmmaker named Nina Compagnies did a two-part series on one of the major French commercial television stations for two nights running, 2 hours each night on a Tuesday and Wednesday in prime time, and won the ratings race that night with her interpretation of Proust. She had filmed this for about 3 years beforehand. There's such a thirst for this. Now, partly it's a fake thirst. I teach this class at UC Berkeley, Osher Lifetime.
Can I read an email about that?
Oh, sure.
Because it's a nice prop for you. Helen says, I'm a fan of Larry Bensky, who introduced me to Proust during his UCB-affiliated Osher Lifelong Learning Institute class. If you terms back, and now I'm a fan of Proust, too, for his exceptional ability to evoke Paris in word and deed. Looking forward to the Thursday night celebration at St. John's in Berkeley. So you get a plug for Larry and a plug for the event.
Thank you.
That was Facebook from Helen.
I want to know who hacked your website here. I mean, like, this didn't have to do with Proust, did it? People weren't trying to suppress him because he was gay or Jewish.
I don't think so. But one never knows. You always had that little touch of paranoia that made you the kind of broadcaster that you were.
And I deserved it.
Do you miss broadcasting, by the way?
No. The short answer is no. I think I...
Enough of the music and the literature?
I did what I did for the years that I did it, and I put
it...
You
did it damn well, if I may say so.
Thank you. I didn't leave my game in the dressing room, and I'm proud of what I did. But I needed, as you said, I wanted something, as I said, I wanted something different, and I have found something different. And I consider myself very fortunate to have done so.
We're talking about Proust mania here, though, but it started long before this centennial. There were books. In fact, we featured them on Forum, Proust and Neuroscience and Proust Guide to Everyday Life and, all these Proust and Love and so forth and so on. So the publishing industry has certainly continued to recognize the importance, at least, of the readers of Proust or those who are interested in
Proust.
Well,
the fact that these books are still in print after all these years. I mean, when I was just starting this project 7 years ago and I was first flying, I think, to New York or maybe Paris, I was in the San Francisco bookstore, the airport bookstore, and I went to the P section, and there were three volumes of Proust for sale. Now, there's a new translation that came out in recent years, and it was the new translation, which is quite good. But I said to myself, this is amazing. The airport bookstore doesn't keep them here for sentimental reasons. They must sell. And then I thought to myself, sure, if you're taking a 14-hour plane ride, why not have a book like this size?
But you Qantas know, Michael, Airlines featuring Proust, yeah.
But Michael, every time I go back through SFO, I still go to that bookstore and I still go to that corner. And as of a few months ago, they still have Proust books there. So they must still be selling.
I think also, if you want to understand, for me, I guess, let me just showcase for a moment how Proust has made its impact on my life. I even at one point when I was attempting and aspiring to be a novelist, created a character named Swan.
Good for you.
I confessed that on air. I've never confessed it before. But there's something just about time and memory that is inimitable in Proust that really any of the greats, you know, Joyce, Mann, you know, Dostoevsky, don't come near what Proust is able to succeed in giving us.
When I read Proust, I frequently, and I do all the time, I frequently get stuck after reading a paragraph or maybe a page because my own memory starts to channel what he's been talking about, even though my life circumstances couldn't have been more different than his. But the way he evokes memory in the past and the possibilities of what ifs and the memories of what was can really trip you out very quickly, or at least me, and I'm not alone there.
You don't need LSD. You're right.
No, not trip you out many, many decades since it. I even went near that.
We got a caller on here, Jack from Davis. Hi.
Hey, I was a science major, and we had to take an English writing class, and we wrote a project, and the teacher immediately handed me Swan's Way with my paper in response, and I immediately changed majors. And so I wanted to thank him because I still have his book. I never returned his book.
Who was the professor?
Oh, this was up in Humboldt State back a long, long time ago. Wow. I couldn't even tell you what his name is now after all these years.
But he changed your life.
Incredibly.
Yeah. Wow, that's good.
But you know, I always tell my friends, you know, you're in a Proust book. You're standing at a gateway, getting ready to walk up to the porch, and 200 pages later, you might have gotten to the first step.
Jack, thank you for that, and thank you, Larry, for all the enthusiasm and passion you bring to Proust, as well as all the really wonderful work you've done through the years, which is appreciated by many, including myself. Again, Larry Bensky's executive producer and host of Radio Proust, a project of the Bard College Center and former national affairs correspondent for Pacifica Radio. And again, the event?
This Thursday night, 7 p.m., St. John's Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. The website is radioproust.org. You can get tickets at Mrs. Dalloway's or University Press Books in Berkeley and maybe at the door.
And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can always email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website when it's in working order, kqed.org/forum. Forum's produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from Chad McClymans. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.